fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. What does Gianni Infantino's recent re-election as FIFA president mean for African football? To try and answer that question, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com, Fisayo Dairo.
For me, I think Gianni Infantino deserves to be entrusted with another 4 years as the head of the World Football Governing Body, FIFA. Over the past 6 years that he has been at the saddle of leadership in the beautiful Rwanda game, I don't think we could have much complaints about how the game has evolved. You know, the major tournaments, the development of club football across the globe, and the inclusivity of small nations and big nations. I think he gets a pass mark in those regards to me. And so I think it won't be out of place for him to get. So it's not a surprise, actually, that he was returned unopposed at the FIFA Congress last weekend in Kigali. We just hope that he doesn't drop the ball. We hope that he continues and also explore other areas where you really think the game can impact more in terms of even the very local grassroots, the very minutest regions of the world. So generally, it was expected because if you have been in charge of FIFA for 6 years and you've somehow tried to live outside of scandals, then I think you really deserve to have another 4 years.
Gianni Infantino's re-election was held in Rwanda, Africa. What do you think Africa will gain or benefit from Infantino's tenure?
Gianni Infantino has always been a fan and a friend of the African continent. Infantino has always shown his love and admiration for African football, African nations, and even African persons. It is no surprise that his current Secretary General is a woman from Africa, Fatima Samura. And having the 73rd FIFA Congress held in a modest African nation of Rwanda at the weekend, it also shows how much he trusts the African continent to handle stuff like this. Let's not forget that come in 2026 in the United States of America, Mexico and Canada, when the FIFA Senior Men's World Cup will take place, Africa will be having an unprecedented 9 teams at least participating. So these are some of the dividends you can enjoy from an administration that do not seclude people from benefiting from proceeds, huge proceeds, the developmental strides of the association or the federation. So definitely Africa can stand to gain more. We expect to see more facilities springing up in African countries backed by FIFA. You know, the FIFA Forward programs is always there to assist the smaller nations that are going to be transparent enough to embrace them. So these are some of the things that will even continue more, especially as FIFA continue to generate huge revenues for the development of the game in the far distant nations of the world.
Fisayo, what should be Gianni Infantino's agenda after his re-election?
Yeah, I believe there are quite a lot of things to expect from Gianni Infantino in his fresh time in office. And I'm sure he's not oblivious of many of them, and because they've been carefully gazetted in some of the things he ruled out shortly after he was re-elected unopposed at the weekend. The game of football is evolving and developing rapidly, and he has to really continue that. This year, we're going to be having the first ever 32-nation FIFA Women's World Cup. In 3 years' time, we're going to be having the first ever 48-nation FIFA Men's World Cup. Now he's proposing that we'll be having the Under-17 World Championship annually. Yeah, these are some of the things that will help in the development of the game, and of course we're helping to pump in money. Some of these smaller nations that have abundance of talents need some of the huge money being derived by football, by FIFA. They've declared record profits from the FIFA Men's World Cup in Qatar. They expect record profits also from the Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. Some of these resources have to be plowed back into these smaller nations to ensure that the beauty and the profits of the game is felt by those that genuinely love the game, by those that are born into the love of the game. These are some of the things. Yes, and of course, club football also has to gain a little more trance globally. You have to have a way of accommodating and respecting club competitions in the less fancied continent, so to say. So these are just some of the things. And of course, the issue of racism in football has to be outrightly tackled, in which we do hope that FIFA, as well as some other campaigns like Kick It Out and whatever you have, will always put all hands on deck to ensure that the game is ridden of its stigma, the game is ridden of any controversy that can really cast aspersion on this beautiful game.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And Fisayo spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Uyo, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Fisayo Dairo, chief football writer at ACLSports.com. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us now with a look at the weekend highlights in the major European club football leagues. Sporty greetings, Prince!
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. English striker of Nigerian descent Bukayo Saka scored twice to help Arsenal secure a 4-1 win against Crystal Palace and move top of the Premier League with 8 points. Brazilian attacker Gabriel Martinelli and Granit Xhaka also registered their names in the score sheet for the Gunners, with Jeffrey Schlupp scoring Palace's consolation goal. The Gunners are back on track after missing a decisive penalty in their shootout defeat to Portuguese giant Sporting Lisbon in the Europa League play last Thursday. Gunners boss Mikel Arteta heaped praises on his team's performance.
Really happy, really pleased the way we started the game. I was already really happy with the way they reacted after Thursday, and we took any question mark away from it, show a lot of determination, a lot of purpose in our way of playing, and I'm really happy to perform the way we did after playing 120 minutes, after losing two big players for us, and still compete and win the game that we did.
That's Arsenal manager Mikel Arteta discussing his team's win against Crystal Palace in the Premier League. Chelsea are also held to a 2-2 draw against Everton at Stamford Bridge. Ellis Simpson, French midfielder of Malian descent Abdoulaye Doucouré, scored for the Toffees, while Joao Felix and Kai Havertz both netted for the Blues. The result leaves Chelsea in 10th place with 38 points, while Everton remains 15th on the Premier League table with 26 points. Chelsea manager Graham Potter assessed his team's performance.
Well, we did a lot well in the game. I thought we did a lot well, and we're just really disappointed with the goals we conceded. That's the really the disappointing thing tonight, because we thought we played well enough to get the 3 points, but ultimately if you don't defend well enough, you leave yourself open, and we paid the price for it.
That's Chelsea manager Graham Potter discussing his team's draw against strugglers Everton in the Premier League. Tottenham Hotspur also earned a dramatic 3-3 draw against Southampton at St Mary's. Shea Adams, Theo Walcott and James Ward-Prowse were all on target for the Saints, while Pedro Porro, Harry Kane and Ivan Perisic scored for Spurs. Tottenham manager Antonio Conte delivered a damning analysis of his team's performance after his team threw away a 3-1 lead.
For me, this is unacceptable. For me. Because this is the first time in my career to see a situation like this. And until now, I wasn't able to change. Not to change, but compare last season, the situation went to become worst. Why? Bah, I don't know, because they are used here. They're used here. Don't play for something important. Yeah, they don't play. They don't want to play under pressure. They don't want to play under stress. Yeah, it's easy in this way. And Tottenham's story is this. 20 years that there is the owner and never won something.
The draw leaves Antonio Conte's team on 49 points, two more than fifth place Newcastle United. Manchester United qualified for the FA Cup semi-final after recovering from 1-0 down to beat Fulham 3-1. The Red Devils will next face Brighton in the semi-finals. Manchester United manager Erik ten Hag shared his thoughts on the match.
I think we played first half quite decent, yeah, and not particularly in possession. In possession, I think we had to use more and better the overload over the left side. We did not that well. But I think in pressing, and especially in attacking transitions, we created great opportunities. And I think in halftime, we should have been up. Because I can't remember a save from David first half. And second half, we came difficult out the dressing room. It was tough. And we conceded the goal from a set play. And then we needed David to survive the game because he had two great saves.
That's Manchester United manager Erik ten Hag assessing his team's performance against Fulham in the FA Cup. Norwegian Benjamin Erling Haaland scored yet another hat-trick to help Manchester City progress to the last four of the FA Cup with a 6-0 win over Burnley. The 22-year-old became only the sixth Premier League player to score at least 40 goals in all competitions in a single season. The win also ensured the Citizens advanced to their fifth successive FA Cup semi-final and will next face Championship side Sheffield United. City manager Pep Guardiola assessed his team's performance.
We struggled a lot to read the game because we didn't expect to make man-to-man. They were quite similar to Arsenal in that terms, as much teams face this type of thing, as much we will learn. So it's so difficult because we don't have a space. Always just Stefan, the keeper, is a free man. And he had to play more on the third man. We had to play more with Erling. We had to play more with Riyad, with Phil. And of course, the game was tight in the first half, really, really tight. And because even we could not control, we could not press well. We adjusted in the second half our pressing. What they were doing, and it was more effective, and of course after 2-0, after they had a clear chance at the end of the first half, when we scored the third, it was easier for us, and our rhythm and our momentum was much better.
Moving on to the French League, goals by Cameroonian forward Karl Toko Ekambi and French forward of DR Congolese descent Arnaud Kalimuendo helped Henné secure a 2-0 win against Paris Saint-Germain. Henné, who have now beaten the Parisians twice this season, moved up to fifth on 50 points, 16 points behind leaders PSG. The win also ended the Parisians' 35-match unbeaten run in the French League at the Parc des Princes. In other fixtures, Alexis Sanchez scored twice to ensure second-place Marseille secured a 2-1 win against Reims, while French forward of Tunisian descent Wissam Ben Yedder scored his 80th career goal for Monaco to cruise to a 2-0 win against Tenman Ajaccio. In the Spanish La Liga, Ivorian forward Frank Kessié and Sergi Roberto also scored to help leaders Barcelona secure a 2-1 win over Real Madrid at Camp Nou. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince. There are two games Monday in the Men's Basketball Africa League in Dakar, Senegal. Kwara Falcons of Nigeria are facing ABC Fighters of Ivory Coast in the first contest, and that will be followed by a game between Rwanda Energy Group and defending BAL champion U.S. Monastir of Tunisia. Rwanda Energy Group is through to the BAL playoffs in Kigali in May, with three wins and one loss. Monastir and the Fighters each have records of two wins and one loss, while the Falcons have lost all four of their games and will be playing only for pride. This Sahara Conference stage will wrap up on Tuesday with two more games at the Dakar Arena. Stade Malien meets the ABC Fighters, And Monastir plays AS Douan of Senegal. Uganda's City Oilers will make their Basketball Africa League debut next month in Cairo, Egypt, where Nile Conference games will be played. John Santama in Kampala has this feature BAL profile of the City Oilers.
The City Oilers Basketball Club has been playing at the Grand Stage since its establishment 12 years ago, competing at such championship games as FIBA and the National Basketball League, where it's locked in 8 consecutive National Basketball League championships since 2014. However, where it comes to big competition, none on the African continent beats the Basketball Africa League Ball Championship, where the team will make its debut next month. City Oilers veteran players like Tony Drileba and team captain James Okello acknowledge that playing at the Ball is a dream come true.
It's been a long wait for us. The first time around, you know, we fell short in 2019. It was very heartbreaking and it took us a much longer time because of COVID to be able to get back to this point, you know, and now to even just think about the games coming up and, you know, we're part of the best 12 teams in Africa. It's a very unbelievable feeling.
The team attributes its high-level play that helped it secure a Ball regular season slot last November in South Africa to adding new players like Fayed Barry, Titus Luwal and Jermaine Roy Brock Jr. to the established stars like Jimmy Enabu and Ben Komakich.
With the way that recruitment has been done is based on what we need as a team, depth, experience. Some of the new players can really play. I think the management has made the necessary adjustments to the team.
A total of 12 African teams will compete in the 2023 Ball regular season. The qualified teams are split into two groups of six, with the top four from the Sahara Conference starting in March and the Nile Conference starting in April, qualifying for the quarterfinals in May in Rwanda for the championship. Uganda's City Oilers is in the Nile Conference to be held in Egypt next month. City Oilers coach Mande Juruni is unfazed by the team's competitors.
We want to continue building chemistry in the team that we had. Obviously, there are some weaknesses that we saw in South Africa that we need to correct. And because of that, you know, we might add in one or two players to reinforce the team. We have the experience, and so we're up for it. We know what's ahead of us. We know what we need to do for us to be able to compete.
Let's go, Oilers! Let's go! Let's go, Oilers! Let's go!
As the team prepares for its Ball debut next month, in Uganda, fans are expectant of a victory from their favorite team.
My name is Angela, a big, big fan of City Oilers, and I love Tony, Jimmy, Koma, basically the whole team. I love the whole team.
My favorite player, actually, I have many, but one in specific, Iron Man, Oxi Okello James, of course.
My favorite player, I am saying this because of where he took us when we were in the qualifiers in South Africa, Philando Jones.
My favorite coach is definitely our real coach, Mande Juruni, who's taken us miles and we're still going miles.
I expect nothing but to qualify. My boys have worked so hard to be in this position, so I'm very sure they also expect to qualify to go to Kigali come May after Cairo.
I can say all players are really good, because every player is good in his or her, his position and the caliber they play, the games they play.
And obviously, we all want to win the Ball title and bring it back home.
I believe so. We are going to make it come May in Kigali.
We expect nothing less. We expect them to, you know, bring it back home so that we all celebrate together. And we are wishing them the best to qualify. And we know that they can do it because they are an amazing team and they have great teamwork.
It's not only the talent, but also the discipline of the team and the communication of the players, whether new or old, the discipline of the players that pushing us to Ball. So we are focused, we are determined to take the championship.
Let's go, Oilers! Oilers, let's go! Let's go, Oilers, let's go!
My favorite coach, of course, that's Coach Mande Juruni. Then my favorite player for the next ongoing ball, we have Titus Raul. He's just joined us. Very good shooter, very good in the paint. Then, of course, expectations for the ball, it's our debut. We expect to, of course, not be there for numbers. We want to go out there and compete, give out the results. And, of course, we'll be representing our country, Uganda.
Reporting for VOA, this is John Sentamu from Kampala, Uganda.
Season 3 of the Basketball Africa League is here. Starting off in Dakar from March 11th to March 21st for the Sahara Conference, then heading to Cairo from April 26th to May 6th for the Nile Conference, and the excitement continues to build in the finals in Kigali from May 21st to May 27th. Tune in and follow the BAL on the Voice of America. Now, under the BAL rules, each of the league's 12 teams is allowed to have 4 foreign players on its roster, including 2 non-African players. Nigeria Basketball Federation board member Victor Okoro urged BAL organizers to use more African players to develop the game on the continent.
So the Basketball African League, for me personally, is a good innovation. Is a good thought to improve basketball in Africa. But my only problems that I've had with the league is the modus operandi of the league. The fact that they are more interested in bringing in players from the US to show up the teams instead of looking for the best of the best of the best in Africa. If you have followed this league in the last 2 years, they have always done something like a program where they select players. The last one was done in Paris. You know, so my own take is this is a league that is supposed to be meant for Africa. Why won't the NBA come to Africa to select players to show the different teams in the different parts of the region where these teams come from, you know? And if you have looked at it properly, there's nowhere the NBA takes players from Africa to go and show up teams in America. You know, so if they're investing and saying this is for Africa, then it has to be for Africa. Going forward, I would like to see not more than 2 players from overseas on those teams. If you have, the team is consists of 12 players, we should encourage the NBA to let a team, for example, a team from Congo, should have 10 players playing in the league in Congo to be on that team. They can bring in 2 players from wherever it is, America, France, I don't care, of African origin. Okay? Now, it doesn't matter. But you have 10 of those players. So what that does for the league is, after these guys finish playing, the 10 of them will go back to their countries. And then they would have gotten that experience, having played with other players from other countries. You know, now, if you know, the way it is being selected, it is almost 1 team per region, which means that if I am from West Africa and I'm a team like Kwara Falcons, it is expedient for me to look for players either in Nigeria, in Benin, in Ghana, in Togo to make up my team instead of looking for 7 players from America. Now, if I have players from African countries that are closer to me to pick up my team, by the time we finish and they all go back to their countries, they will have people looking up to them. So what this pyramid effect is, players in Ghana, Togo, Benin, and Nigeria will have people to look up to that they see in their environment that are physically available to experience the same experience that these guys have experienced going to go and play the beer.
That's Victor Okoro, a board member of the Nigeria Basketball Federation, and Victor spoke on the telephone from London.
Sporty greetings. This is Liz Mills, head coach of Abidjan Basketball Club of Côte d'Ivoire. You are listening to Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. You can follow the Sunnyside of Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and at voaafrica.com. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. My Twitter handle is at VOA Sunny Sports. And if you go to voaafrica.com, you can listen online to the Sunny Side of Sports and other programs. Check out voaafrica.com. Professional golf. Taylor Moore has lifted the trophy at the Valspar Championship in Florida. George McNeely reports from Palm Harbor, Florida.
It really looked like Jordan Spieth's tournament to win. Even Adam Shank here at the Innisbrook Resort's Copperhead course. But Texan Taylor Moore played bogey-free golf over his final 11 holes. He fires a 4-under par 67 Sunday and wins the Valspar Championship by a single shot.
It still really hasn't sunk in. I mean, it's a pretty awesome feeling, obviously knowing everything that goes with it. So super happy, and not only for myself, but, you know, everybody that's here with me today, my family and my team, and really looking forward to what's to come.
Taylor Moore's four-day total was 10-under par.
I've done a lot of good things this year. Excited about where my game's at for sure, and just so happy to get it done today. I mean, that was insane, but overall really like where my game's at.
Meanwhile, runner-up Adam Shank, like Moore, was seeking his first PGA Tour victory, but a bogey on 18 gave him his best finish ever. Solo second place, 1-under for the day, 9-under par for the week.
I hit a really bad drive on the last hole. I towed it. Wish it could have lightly hit somebody and stayed where I had a chance to get to the green, but it did not, and I didn't deserve it. And I had a chance with the wedge shot that came up short, and then I had a chance with the putt, which was, I mean, surprisingly, I actually hit the pin and came close. But it stinks to get so close, but great week all in all, so I can't really complain. David and I did about as good as we could have done with how I hit it today. Didn't hit it quite as good, but very pleased.
Runner-up Adam Shank, while Jordan Spieth, the three-time major winner, 2015 champion here, he allowed the snake pit to live up to its name. He bogeyed two of his final three holes, numbers 16 and 18, to finish two shots back in a tie for third place with Tommy Fleetwood, both 8-under par.
It was a really challenging day to play golf, and he must have shot 4-under, is that right? And that would be one of the low rounds of the day, I imagine, which, coming late in the day, that's pretty good.
The words of a disappointed Jordan Spieth, while Moore becomes one of just six players to make the Valspar Championship his first PGA Tour victory, just like Sam Burns did 2 years ago before repeating as last year's winner. Burns finished in sixth place at -5 after firing a 4-under par 67 in his final round. Covering the Valspar Championship, where Taylor Moore captures his first tour win, I'm George McNeely in Palm Harbor, Florida, for the Sunny Side of Sports.
And that wraps up the March 20th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
I get it.
I'm VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.